Good morning. It's Friday, November 21st, and you've tuned in to North Idaho News of the Week here on 88.5 KRFY. I'm Jack Peterson, Lonesome Jack for the morning without Chris Bessler here. He is traveling, I believe, and returning later today, but not in the studio at this moment. Fortunately, I'm joined by two reporters who cover particularly the city beat here in Sandpoint, Idaho. Jack Freeman, the staff reporter for the Bonner County Daily Bee, and Zach Hagedon, the editor-in-chief of the Sandpoint Reader. And we are talking about today, we've got a full news slate just from the city of Sandpoint. Two kind of blockbuster meetings, one very emotionally charged, and then one, I would say, at least touching on important issues. The Planning and Zoning Commission met on Tuesday night and discussed the short-term rental ordinance changes that could, if passed by City Council, altogether lift the restrictions on short-term rental, or altogether lift the 35-unit cap on short-term rentals that are not owner-occupied in the city of Sandpoint, and remove it entirely, making it an option for people to own homes here and rent them out without actually living here. For an unlimited number of people, technically unlimited number of people, but the more, as I said, emotionally charged meeting was the city council meeting on Wednesday night that started at 5:30 and wrapped up just about 11:15. So that's about almost a 6-hour meeting, featuring lots of testimony from citizens and even non-citizens, but members of the public, who ultimately the result of that meeting was that city council voted. Actually, they tied, but ultimately the mayor, breaking the tie, struck down, or at least voted to amend, the non-discrimination ordinance that has stood since 2011. The vote was 3-3 with Mayor Grimm breaking the tie in favor of amending the ordinance. The members who voted in favor of amending that ordinance were Council Member Joel Espiro, Council Member Rick Howarth, and Council Member Justin Dick. Those opposed were Council President Deb Rule, Council Member Pam Duquette, and Council Member Kyle Schreiber. Mayor Jeremy Grimm broke the tie. I think we should probably start with that meeting first and then get to the important planning and zoning stuff later. We'll try to keep it brief, but let's see. Well, Jack Freeman, you were in the room. A long meeting. I don't know. Can you tell us, can you characterize the people who were there and how this vote came about? I guess give us the facts of the case. Give us what happened on Wednesday night, in your opinion, or in your words.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of very emotionally charged testimony. I think I counted over 80 people spoke, whether it was in person or on Zoom.
80. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The council chambers were packed. I got there at 5:00. That's usually when they open council mm-hmm. doors, and usually I'm the first one there and get to talk to people, and it was the lobby of the council chambers was already pretty much filled out. There were members of the public who ended up sitting in the parking lot watching the meeting on their phones. So mm-hmm. Not any type of I haven't seen an issue bring people out like that, at least in my time here, which is relatively short. With that said, I think there was a lot of like I said, emotionally charged testimony, a lot of people sharing their stories of sexual assault and personal feelings on the matter. Notably, no transgender person spoke at the meeting, mm-hmm. which I thought was interesting on the issue, which was really, you know, the non-discrimination ordinance applied to everything, but what really sparked it was the incident at the YMCA.
And a Facebook post, I think, dated October 15th, where, a member of the public on social media posted that they had seen in their terms, they had seen a man in the women's locker room at the YMCA. And that was the origin of this, what ended up becoming a matter of city business and led to the overturning of the non-discrimination ordinance. Sorry, yeah. go on.
No, yeah. And I think a lot of that emotional testimony stuck with some of the council members. It didn't really feel like any council members were looking, were able to change their minds afterwards. Mm-hmm. There were some aspects of the ordinance that they didn't like as well. I don't know if they liked being involved in that at all. I think that's a point that Jeremy Grimm really stuck with, was the fact that this really shouldn't be our business, in addition to his personal feelings on the matter.
The vote did, it wasn't just testimony and then a 4-3 vote. There were two other motions or two other amendments. What were those? Those they were proposed by, I think, Pam Duquette and Kyle Schreiber, right?
Yeah, they were both to delay. Yeah. Delay the amendments. Kyle made his first motion. He wanted to put this to the voters. In his opinion, he thought it could potentially affect the bond measure that was recently passed. Legal didn't exactly agree with him on that, but he wanted to put it to the voters. That was ultimately struck down on the same voting lines with Jeremy Grimm breaking the tie. And then Pam Duquette wanted to delay it to January so that the new council members who spoke out in favor of keeping the ordinance at the meeting could have their say, and that was struck down on the same lines.
And both of those struck down. It was a tie again in both cases, 3-3, and the mayor voted against both of those. How did we get here? How did this come about? How did it go from a Facebook post basically a month before the meeting, approximately almost exactly 1 month before the meeting, to a rather dramatic change in city law a month later? And I mean, maybe I don't know if this is a better question for Zach or Jack, who's been following the story more closely. Just the development of it. How did it become city business at all, rather than just being a matter of YMCA policy, if anything at all?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the broader context, you have to go back to the origination of the non-discrimination ordinance in 2011, and I can speak to that because I was a reporter at the Sandpoint Reader in 2011 covering this at City Hall. And I also need to disclose, of course, that the Reader co-founder and co-publisher, John Reuter, he was, you know, working at the paper at that time, but he also was the city council president. Mm-hmm. And this was his ordinance. Like he brought this to the council, shepherded it through, you know, wrangled the votes, did the outreach, you know, worked with members of the community to explain it, talked to legal experts, worked with human rights organizations. So I had kind of a front row seat to the back room little bit, you know, working with John every day at the paper and then covering the meetings, you know, every week. So I saw how it sort of developed and the work that it took to craft the original ordinance. And it, you know, it took months, and this was not a sort of a flash in the pan piece of legislation that just sort of appeared out of nowhere in 2011 and then suddenly became, you know, city code. That we had workshops, we had meetings, you know, people came out and testified. It was as charged back then as it is now. I was talking to John actually on the phone the other day. He lives in Boston now, and I was kind of filling him in on, you know, what's been going on with this ordinance, because he cared very deeply about this and was very proud of it getting passed. And he was reminding me of those days when, you know, he was getting death threats. His wife was getting death threats. It was very controversial. And it passed on a unanimous vote from that council in 2011. And then it really sort of, you know, they passed it in 2011. And then it kind of really went into effect in 2012, which is why you see kind of people describing, like, this is a 15-year-old ordinance or a 12-year-old, or, you know, blah, blah. You know, it's basically like a 14 years ago, I guess, is when they passed it. And one of the things that's kind of surprised me a little bit about the discourse surrounding the issue now is how surprised so many people seem to be that we have this ordinance. Because this was not done in a quiet way back then. I mean, and even Mayor Grimm seems strangely sort of taken aback by this ordinance's existence, which I also find kind of strange to contemplate considering he was our city planner at the time.
Yeah.
So he was in the council chambers while this was happening, while it was being discussed and debated and formulated. And, you know, he knew John, he knew me. So the fact that people are acting surprised that we have this ordinance and that it's somehow a revolutionary idea and I had no idea we had this, like, I don't get it. Maybe there's just so few people living here that lived here back then. Maybe that's the explanation. But anyway, so that's the deeper context. It's like this has been an established, known piece of city code for a very long time.
Yeah.
And has caused us no problems in that time.
Yeah.
Of any kind.
No legal problems. Also, it was, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was the first one in the state of Idaho.
That's the other piece of context here is that, you know, we were the first city in the state to pass an ordinance of this kind, which, as I say, was very heavily vetted, was heavily debated, analyzed, found to be within compliance of all state and federal laws. I mean, even our own city attorney, Zach Jones, at the meeting on Wednesday, just this past Wednesday, said that this is a very deferential ordinance to both state and federal code. And it was crafted that way on purpose so that it would pass legal muster. And it has for all the time that it's existed. So I'm trying to remember what your initial question was there.
Me too. Go ahead,
Jared. I can kind of jump in if you want to talk about how it ended up here, where it is now.
Yeah.
Right. Sorry, I went down the memory hole there.
No, that was fantastic.
It's
no,
good. It's, yeah, good it's to have that
needed
context.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Jack. But where did we? How did we end up here all of a sudden? Or what seems like, especially given that it's been in place for basically 14 years, how did we get here over the course of about a month?
Just from my understanding of it, our county reporter really covered this closely. It was kind of kicked off and stayed a little bit quiet for the first couple weeks. But basically the Facebook post is made about a lifeguard working at the YMCA who claims that she sees this semi-dressed male-looking person in the women's locker room. And then as we kind of follow up our reporting on it and people continue to it escalates into a bigger thing kind of online, the YMCA basically comes out and says, yes, this is our policy, and we've based our policy on Sandpoint City Code, specifically referring to the non-discrimination ordinance. And then at the same meeting where the Avril Hospitality kind of debacle went down, after everybody had kind of cleared out, the lifeguard had come up and basically asked the mayor to review Sandpoint City Code. And that was seemingly the first time I think that it was brought to his attention. He seemed kind of surprised at it, like, oh, I didn't know that was a thing, or that the YMCA was claiming that. And then it's just been, and that was only 2 weeks ago. Council had a kind of brief discussion at a special meeting last week. There was about an hour of public testimony there as well, more along the same lines of what we saw on Wednesday. And then it's ended up here. So a very fast-moving ordinance, to be sure. But that, to my understanding, that's how we've kind of ended up with it now being amended.
Yeah, right. I remembered where I was going.
Yeah, where were you going?
If you want to just...
Yeah, go ahead, Jack.
So you were mentioning this, that we were the first to to pass
we were
one such ordinance. And then that became kind of the template maybe that was used by many other communities throughout Idaho. And so that's another piece of the context. It's like ours was the first of these NDOs that were then modeled all around the state, including in like Boise, you know, and some of in much bigger communities. So to see ours get amended, you know, quote unquote, but, you know, let's be honest, like this is an amendment that is a de facto repeal. It removes the vast majority of the internal workings of the existing or the previous NDO. I mean, it gets rid of the definitions, gets rid of the Human Relations Review Board. It, you know, the whole complaint structure is gone, and it refers basically everything to the state and the federal authorities. So you can call it an amendment if you want, but you can amend it to the point where it doesn't really exist anymore. It's kind of like, what is it, Theseus's ship, you know, like you can replace all the parts to such a degree that, like, is it still the same ordinance?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Okay. So,
and one other thing I will add about, you know, the origination of this particular hubbub, going back to that Facebook post that we were referring to, another thing that struck me about this, especially considering how fast it's moved, is that all this is allegation and implication, and there was no actual incident. Like we keep saying incident, mm-hmm. but there was actually nothing happened. You know, this lifeguard claims without any sort of corroborative evidence that there was a person who she assumed was a quote unquote biological male.
Yeah.
Apparently based only on her claims was wearing some kind of like female looking garment, was semi dressed in some way. And then, you know, the lifeguard sort of like followed this person around,
yeah,
trying to ascertain their gender. But there was no altercation. There was no inappropriate behavior. It was reported to the YMCA staff, allegedly. YMCA, you know, referred to the policy, said no policy had been broken. The police were contacted, apparently, and the police responded with, you know, well, no laws were broken. Like, we have the non-discrimination ordinance. This person didn't do anything wrong. They're within YMCA policy. So ultimately, there's no there. That has been kind of frustrating, I think, for a lot of people, including as a reporter, where I don't particularly like basing anything on all these levels of supposition. But once you kick something like that into the Facebook world, you know, there's no responsibility on Facebook. No one has any compunction, you know, to say whatever comes into their mind. They just post and post and post, and, you know, it racks up hundreds of likes, comments, you know, whatever. And they sort of like created this issue out of what looks on paper to be nothing, and fueled sort of this outrage process that then culminates into the meeting that we saw on Wednesday, which, you know, is very accurately described as emotionally charged. I mean, I wasn't able to be in the room. I actually almost missed my hard press date trying to turn this story around because I have to have my paper to the press by 11:15. So
yeah,
I had to turn this story around in about 45 minutes so the paper could be plated.
Yeah.
So I wasn't able to be there, but even just watching it remotely, you know, you could sense the emotion. And Jack, I mean, I'm sure there was probably a lot more palpable in the room. I've been in rooms, you know, the council chambers before on other issues where you can just feel that people are like very invested, emotional, they're tense, they're on edge. It's a lot of sound and fury. And it signified something this time.
Yeah. That testimony, I watched it as well, or watched much of it. A lot of it, kind of the testimony that was in favor of either repealing or heavily amending the ordinance, kind of focused on women's safety, I guess. And that was really all, I mean, those that were focused on the ordinance, focused on women's safety, there were some other comments that were kind of really hard to understand how they applied to city politics one way or another. But those that were there were, yeah, focused on women's safety. How about, was there testimony in the other direction, those in favor of keeping the ordinance? The testimony did not go all one way, or more or less, right?
Yeah. No, there was plenty of people who spoke out in favor of keeping the ordinance. I mean, even the newly elected city council members both said either, you know, slow roll it to give them a chance, or, you know, keep it for right now.
Yeah.
So there was plenty, including, you know, the Sandpoint Alliance for Equality, SAFE. They had a couple of representatives. There were other people there as well. So it was definitely a balance, definitely more balanced than last week's meeting. Mm-hmm. Public comment.
I don't know.
It did bring out some fairly well-known characters as well. I mean, we had the Bonner County Human Rights Task Force folks spoke. We had Bonner County Sheriff Darrell Wheeler get up and make a comment. We had former District 1 Senator, current Bonner County Republican Central Committee Chair Scott Herndon get up and say some words. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know, Jack. I mean, Jack Freeman, sorry.
That's all right.
We got two Jacks here.
Yeah.
Jack Freeman. My sense was that it wasn't necessarily all that balanced in terms of the numbers. I mean, my feeling, and again, I wasn't in the room. I was just watching it remote, but my sense was that there was a pretty solid majority of folks came out against keeping the ordinance. I mean, there were voices, as you say, you know, in favor of keeping it, but I don't know. I mean, it felt more more slanted toward the get rid of it sort of side.
It was definitely more slanted. Maybe balance wasn't the right word. When I at the Wednesday meeting, when they just kind of discussed this, there wasn't even supposed to be public comment, but the mayor kind of allowed it anyway. And that was like 11 to 1, you know, with just one person in favor of keeping the ordinance. So I'm meant to apply maybe more balance than what we've seen in the past. Right. But it was definitely people were the majority of the people who were there spoke out in favor of this, the mayor's amendment.
Right. And it was pretty clear to me, and I don't have anything to base this on, but my sense was that these people were kind of organized to be there, considering how far afield they came from. And there was one individual who came from Kerrywood. You know, there was people from Priest River that showed up. Lots of Bonner County residents showed up. And, you know, I know that the Bonner County Republican Central Committee had a meeting on Tuesday, so the night before the council meeting, where they passed a resolution with only two members dissenting. And that resolution from the BCRCC was basically, you know, this ordinance needs to go away. Mm-hmm. You know, there needs to be, you know, the city of Sandpoint has to change or get rid of this entirely. And then they called on some, you know, the legislature to address the issue. Mm-hmm. So the central committee had already been activated on this issue the night before, you know, in a formal meeting. And I can't imagine, you know, just given the presence of Scott Herndon at the meeting, that folks who went to that meeting on Tuesday didn't also go to that meeting on Wednesday. So there was definitely, I think, an organized attempt to get people to that meeting. I know that SAFE was organizing people to go. I mean, there were a lot of parties that were like, okay, people, we need to get out and be here, which is why that was such a huge meeting. You know, which I'm not saying is a bad thing. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that people had an interest to be there, mm-hmm. and they had an interest coming from, you know, other organizations they may be associated with and were there representing, you know, viewpoints from those organizations. And I want to go back to the Herndon bit just a little bit, because I think this is a part of the larger story is and why there was such an urgency to get rid of this thing or repeal mm-hmm. or amend it, you know, is that we are expecting to see legislation in Boise this coming session that addresses sort of trans bathroom issues and other items related to, you know, that sort of touch on non-discrimination. And Herndon, you know, said during his testimony that he knows of at least three bills that are going to touch on these issues. And I think that the mayor also kind of referred to this both at the meeting last week and the meeting this week, you know, that we're expecting legislation that, you know, that Boise's probably going to be moving on some of these issues. And maybe it was a good idea to kind of get out of their way in a sense.
Yeah. Part of the, yeah. And then part of that urgency, in addition to the legislative session kicking off in January, also you have two new city councilors coming on, to replace two of the votes in favor of the amendment. And I think based on their testimony, it's safe to say that if the amendment had waited until January, it probably would not have passed. I guess I'm not sure about that, but
that's a reasonable
reason. Yeah.
That is a very reasonable
point. Right. Yeah. I mean, so it kind of, if it was going to happen, it had to happen now. It couldn't wait any longer, I guess. And so it did. And so, yes, for now, the non-discrimination ordinance amended and basically all but repealed by city council.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will just touch on this. I got the chance to get a statement from the YMCA yesterday, and a mm-hmm. lot of some testimony in what the mayor has said was that, you know, this shouldn't be a city issue. And when I got a statement from the YMCA, they said, well, now that you've changed the ordinance, we would like some regulations on how we don't get in trouble again.
Right.
And so it seems like, even despite his best efforts, this might continue to be an issue that the city is faced with because it has now gotten involved either way.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's a very astute observation. I'm all but certain this will continue to be an issue.
Yeah,
and this is a little bit of speculation because I know you love that.
I do, yes, especially coming from you, Zach.
I'm going to put on my prognosticator journalist hat, or take off my journalist hat and put on my prognosticator hat.
Yeah.
And once these new council members are on the dais after January, I would not be surprised if we see a motion to return
to restore it.
The NDO as it was, or if not as it was, then with some tweaks, you know, to address some of these other issues. I think that there was some opposition to the idea of the Human Relations Review Board. That was something that I think Councilors Spiro and Dick both had a problem with. And it was interesting to me, the choice of language that they used, right? I mean, Joel Spiro came right out and referred to it as a tribunal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that description is not accurate. I mean, a tribunal has, you know, sort of judicial power. And this is a review board. It has advisory power. So, but anyway, that language of tribunal sort of spread. You know, I heard Councilor Dick use it at one point, and then Mayor Grimm used it. So that obviously was a sticking point for some people, and it's possible that, you know, if there was a motion to bring this back in January and, like, reinstate it, that would maybe be a discussion point, like how to change or get rid of that idea of a review board so that people don't feel like it's a tribunal. You know, there's Councilor Dick was kind of the one on the side, you know, who voted in favor of Grimm's ordinance. He seemed more amenable to tweaking the existing ordinance than going full in with the mayor's ordinance. And the review board was one of his things. And the other one was, hopefully getting some kind of language that directly addresses bathrooms.
Yeah.
So, I mean, ultimately he voted with Spiro and Howarth, to do the ordinance as it is now. But that could be a discussion in January. And I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it would not surprise me.
Yeah.
If it did.
All right. Poor clock maintenance by your host here, because look at this. It's already 8:30. We have to talk, at least bring the public, the listeners up to speed on what's going on at planning and zoning. The short-term rental ordinance changes, you know, I guess in the past, and when I mentioned this at the top of the show, I said it's removing the cap, but that's probably a little unfair, or at least uncharitable, because it's not just a matter of removing the cap.
It's doing a lot of things.
Yeah. Would either of you care to kind of summarize what the what planning and zoning is considering right now? What the changes would be to those short-term rental ordinances? Jack Freeman.
Yeah, I'll jump on that. Yeah. So obviously, I think the cap is kind of the main thing that people.
That's what people are
hearing about.
Noticing. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there is a couple of changing regulations. They're increasing the parking requirement for STRs, I believe, to 2 spaces per bedroom. They're requiring a local representative who lives within 20 drivable miles of Sandpoint. And a couple other things along those lines to the way that Jason Welker has put it, to protect the neighborhood character as much as they can to try and, I guess, limit those changes. The other big change is that any STR that wants to hold, I think it's 12 or more, will require a conditional use permit that will need to go through the Planning and Zoning Commission. And that's something that they even touched on in their meeting that, hey, is that something that we could take down that cap? But, you know, why is it 12, you know? But those are kind of the big changes that they're aiming toward. There's a couple of small things in there as well, but I think I hit the big points.
Right, yeah. One of the other things, too, is they're going to tie the fee or the fine, you know, for noncompliance to the city's fee schedule, because it was like a set $100 per day or whatever.
Yeah.
So now that fee is potentially or probably going to be higher for violations. And something that I found really interesting about this particular issue is that the city has been pretty clear that they didn't want to have to do this. Mm-hmm. You know, they've said this more than once, you know, that this is being done out of sort of practicality and not out of desire. And the reason is, not unlike the NDO thing, there's fear of litigation in the wind. You know, there's a vacation rental association in Coeur d'Alene, and then there's a statewide rental alliance that has said, you know, all but threatened in a sense that they will bring litigation against Sandpoint, as they have done in other communities, challenging what they consider to be, you know, overreach in regulation, and specifically these caps. You know, any community that has a cap, they argue, is a de facto prohibition on the ability for homeowners or property owners to use their property as they wish. And Idaho code does have a section that I think dates to 2018, mm-hmm. that says, you know, cities and municipalities, including counties, are allowed to regulate short-term rentals as they see fit, although they cannot do anything that is a de facto ban or prohibition. Yeah. And so folks like the Vacation Rental Alliance, they argue that these caps are de facto bans and prohibitions and therefore are struck down. One in Lava Hot Springs got struck down because of the cap, but there was another case in McCall that was upheld, and I think that probably had to do with the fact that they didn't put in a hard cap.
Yeah.
So the effort by the city in this particular case is to avoid that litigation by just sort of like saying, okay, no cap, but then going back into the regulations and trying to strengthen them in any way they can in ways that aren't going to run afoul of both the state code and trigger, you know, legal action by some of these sort of interest groups. And again, like the NDO, they're also anticipating legislative action in 2026. There were bills in 2025, I think, in 2024 even, maybe, mm-hmm. that tried to loosen regulation on short-term rentals. They haven't succeeded, mm-hmm. but there's no way that they're not coming back. So we've got two big issues at City Hall where, you know, they're worried about litigation and they're worried about what the legislature is going to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I believe also the Supreme Court has set, the Idaho Supreme Court will be taking up the McCall case as well. So this ordinance as it stands right now might even need to be changed in the very near future depending on the outcome of that case, which I think Jason Walker said in the meeting will be in January.
Yeah, I mean,
so we'll see.
Potentially, yeah.
Coming up, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And he mentioned that, Planning and Community Development Director Jason Welker, who gave this presentation on it, he mentioned that they had based their new code or this proposed new code specifically on the McCall text that had been found to be, that was upheld
right.
in their court case.
Yeah,
it has been so far anyway.
Yeah, anyway. And Welker, and he makes a good point, you know, like people have kind of gotten up in arms about this ordinance saying that it's mm-hmm. a deregulation. He pushed back against that thing. Like, this is not a deregulation. We're removing the cap, but we're actually mm-hmm. strengthening the regulation in a bunch of other areas that are going to be potentially more meaningful even than just a hard cap, which has been shown to be legally indefensible, I think was the term that was used.
I think my question would be, to Mr. Welker, who may well be listening, is he cited the existing cap in Lava Hot Springs was at zero, and our cap is at 35.
Right.
So to my I'm not a legal professional, but I would say there is a difference between zero being an effective prohibition and 35 being interpreted the same way. I would think a lawyer could find lawyers could potentially disagree on that. I would be my speculation. I don't know. To once again speculate.
It is speculation, but I do know that the Idaho Vacation Rentals Association cited the cap as one of the things that they were considering. Yeah. So if your primary concern is litigation and they're threatening you with that one thing, then that might be, you know, a reason enough to consider removing.
Yeah. Hey, the outcome of the meeting, though, by the way, was not to recommend it to City Council yet. Instead, the Planning and Zoning Commission deferred that recommendation and instead voted for, or they directed city staff to further investigate parking and occupancy standards for short-term rentals, as well as work on a definition of neighborhood integrity, which is part of the state the state language
right.
on the
And the neighborhood integrity piece of that is interesting because that's something that the Vacation Rental Alliance and Association folks mm-hmm. have mentioned as being problematic because they claim that there's no definition for that. So when they go to court, they say you can't define this.
Yeah.
So how can you use it as a reason to justify these regulations if you don't even have a definition for it?
Yeah.
And so that's I think why they put that piece in.
Mm-hmm.
Is to have something in hand that if they get a challenge, like, okay, you say we don't have a definition of neighborhood integrity, here it is.
Yeah.
And then they can argue about that. As they do.
Yes. Okay. Well, I have to let you both go. I know it's a busy day. Lots of news to talk about. Anything else either of you want to mention? Anything coming up in the Daily Bee or the Sandpoint Reader or anything you want to highlight before we take off? Go ahead, Jack, what else are you working on?
A lot more City Hall news. Be following that. We can't touch on it right now, but the city administrator conversation's been kicked up again at the end of last night's meeting, so I'm sure we'll both be all over that, talking with people about that. And then I believe yesterday Sandpoint's area of impact is officially gone, accepted by the Bonner County Commissioner, so I'll be writing about that as well.
Yeah, so we have there is no area of impact anymore for the city of Sandpoint.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, like Jack mentioned, I mean, we're looking into the city administrator conversation, too. I obviously didn't have time to listen to that part of the meeting yet, but we'll be looking at that, following more on this NDO thing. I mean, that story's not done. I mean, there's so much more to unpack and look at the implications and follow the legislation and whatever else might transpire. So, I mean, we'll be doing that. One thing I will note, though, to readers is that because next week is Thanksgiving on a Thursday, the papers will not be delivered on Thursday. They will be coming out on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So we are a day early for the holiday week so that we can all have a holiday and so our press guys can have a holiday too.
Yeah.
So don't go looking for the reader on Thanksgiving morning.
Yes.
It won't be there. It'll be there on Wednesday.
Wednesday morning. Yes. Okay. And with a new article by Marcia Pilgrim, I believe.
Yeah, it was very happy for us that her food column lands on Thanksgiving week. So.
That's right. She's actually our guest on the Thursday morning show. On Thanksgiving morning, you can tune in and hear Marcia talk all about Thanksgiving food here on these airways if you want.
She told me she was very excited about that.
Okay, very good. Yeah, it was a nice conversation that we had. Okay, that's Thanksgiving. And with that, we turn it over to Otto's Eclectic Mix here on 88.5 KRFY. Jack Freeman, staff reporter for the Bonner County Daily Bee, and Zach Hagedon, editor-in-chief of the Sandpoint Reader. Thank you both so very much for being here this morning.
Thank you, Jax.
Yeah, thank you.